And now, enjoy this free JZO Modcast show.
Hey there, this is Ralph Garman, and you are listening to the World of Mythbits. You made an excellent choice.
G'day from SA. This is Tim here with episode 272 of the World of Mythbits. Welcome, everyone. Welcome to episode 272. I hope that you've been enjoying the last couple of episodes where we've reviewed 2006. I am aware that the issue 125, the April edition of the World of Myth magazine, is out now with an incredibly stunning cover. And I cannot wait to sink my teeth into all the amazing poetry and stories and art and reviews and everything that this magazine proves to bring to the table issue after issue after issue. But this episode's not the review of magazine 125. This issue, I actually have a very special guest. A great friend of mine. But before we get into that, before I reveal this person's identity, just a few housekeeping things from El Presidente, Mr. David K. Montoya. So just jumping in, we have, yes, of course, the open contract challenge is now closed. And so the judges are looking through, and they're working their way through the applicants, looking at the top 10 and then the potential for a wild card, an 11th entry, as well, which is super, super, super exciting. Such a great opportunity for, established writers, but also for like newcomers as well. It's quite often it's somebody's name that sort of pops in the list in the top 10 or the top 11 that is literally writing for the first time or submitting something for publication for the first time, which I think is absolutely and utterly amazing. Just the opportunity, the prize, first, second, third prize. The fact that it's in the sixth year this year. And my fingers are crossed. My hat is in the ring. And I'm sure that there are so many others that have taken that opportunity. There is... Oh, yes. The American Smash 1/2. Issue. The Montoya family are madly boxing them up, getting them ready to send out across the world to celebrate Free Comic Book Day, which is May the 4th, I believe. So make sure that you check out your local comic book store, and hopefully you'll be able to pick up a free copy of American Smash 1/2. So good. It is, yeah, so good. Finally, just thank you to everybody who has thought to donate to the GoFundMe page that, that Dave and Looper set up for the company. I'm not sure if it's still open, still running, but Dave just wanted to get me to mention, yeah, a big thank you to those of us who have actually donated to help the company do amazing things. Oh, and finally, don't forget, ZombieWorks is looking for submissions for Monsterthology 3. Looking for traditional monster stories, like your vampire stories, your werewolf stories, your mummy, your mad scientist's creations. So make sure that you get those stories in now. That is open, looking for 2,000 to 3,000 word stories. I'm thrilled that I'm in. I got the word the other day that, yesterday actually, that my vampire story, which is traditional with the twists, I guess, that's in. So look out for Immortal Fatality in that anthology. And yeah, please send your traditional monster inspired stories now. But yes, it is open until I think it's the end of August. And now I wanted to welcome a wonderful friend, an amazing supporter of writers everywhere. Lisa Huffins Owens, welcome to episode 272 of The World of Myth Bits.
Well, thank you, Tim. I'm so glad to be here, and that sounds like quite a lineup. You just, spelled it out. That's amazing and exciting.
There's definitely a lot going on. Things are happening with this company, most definitely. So, just wondering, Lisa, have you submitted to the Open Contract Challenge?
No, I thought about it, and I've kind of got myself pretty overwhelmed right now. I've got some stories involved in other contests that I had already submitted to earlier, and so I just didn't get it in. I had it on my radar, and it got sort of put on the back burner, and I'm really sorry that I'm going to miss it, but maybe next year.
Absolutely. So I suspect that this competition will continue going up to 10 years and beyond, I'm sure. So there's still plenty of opportunities year in, year out. Keep that submission ready for April next year. But you're right though, there are some amazing opportunities for writers, especially now for publishing online, for publishing in anthologies. Many, many different companies. I did see there was a Holland-based company that you and another writer friend, Dawn de Brouw, have actually managed to get submissions into and get accepted for. So that's super exciting.
Yes, House of Loki. That's my first time publishing with them, and I'm really excited about it. It's a fairy tale. Children's age 7 to 12 fairy tale with a recipe that goes along with your story called Fairy Tale Feasts. And so I was glad to see Dawn and I have, and you as well, we've all shared the same table of contents many times, and it's really nice to see familiar names and everything. That's real exciting to be find a niche that I didn't know I had, which is sort of writing for the young adult and children's age groups. I had no idea that that most of my things are really, I think now in hindsight, geared for a young adult audience.
Oh yes, yeah. I will let you in on a little secret. I have let Callum at House of Loki know that I've got an idea for that one as well, the monster recipes. So I'll be madly writing and hopefully submitting soon, and hopefully joining you and Dawn there.
Good. That'll be good. What kind of recipe are you thinking?
Do you
have any ideas?
I'm thinking the story will be along the lines of gigantic gingerbread man monster. So it'll have to be something man shaped and definitely ginger flavored.
Oh, that'll be great. I like that idea.
Indeed.
But there'll be so many different takes. Mine is a kind of, I don't know if you have this in Australia, but it's sort of a Texas thing, and it used to be my son's favorite birthday cake. It's called Dirt. And have you ever heard of it?
Dirt as a cake?
Dirt. Yeah, Dirt. It's called Dirt. And what it is, it's chocolate pudding mixed with Cool Whip and Oreos. And you kind of layer it in a 9x13 pan. And then you top it with gummy worms, like they're coming out of the soil.
Oh, wow. So
that's what my recipe is.
Oh, fantastic. I have to say, My mum used to make for us, when I was really, really little, a very simple version of mince and spaghetti, I guess it was, and it was called Earthen Worms.
Oh, nice.
So that, yeah, I've got fond memories of that, but I can't say that I've ever...
Was it just regular spaghetti and she just, in her imagination, made it seem like worms?
Yeah, she just broke, because we were, like, my brother and I were probably not even at school yet at that time. So she just broke the spaghetti into thirds. So it was like little white squiggly worms. It was just basic, like no sauce. Probably a bit of salt and pepper, maybe to bring the meat flavoring out. It was just the browning off of the mince to make it look like dirt, and we loved it. It's like earthen worms,
yeah,
fantastic.
Making mealtimes fun.
Oh, definitely, definitely. I know I've sent you a bit of a pre-list of some questions to go through. But I've managed to lose the questions, Lisa. So we're very much going off the track slightly. But I know
that's
that
okay, because I don't remember all the questions. I kind of looked at them, but I don't have them either. So let's just do our thing and just see where it goes.
Yeah, brilliant.
That'll be good.
Sounds perfect. So you did mention writing for children is something new for you.
Yes.
What sort of genre do you tend to write, or do you enjoy most writing?
Well, I do a lot of different genres, but as you probably know, one of my favorites is horror, but I do kind of a mild version of horror, and I also use a lot of comedy with it, a lot of humor, so I would call it dark comedy, possibly. And I sent a story in called Bamboozle that I wrote for a contest that is an eco-horror. And I sent it to Callum, and just on a whim, because I didn't really know if it was age-appropriate or not, and he really loved it. So it's going to be in Curious Tales for Curious Folk.
Oh, yes. Yes, another House of Loki anthology.
Yes, another anthology by House of Loki. And then I started taking a real, like, sitting back and just taking a look at what I write, and I decided that really most of my mild horror is geared for the young adult audience. And so that opens a lot of stories that I can kind of pull out and maybe modify slightly and have a new target audience.
Absolutely, absolutely.
That was really exciting.
It's, yeah, very, very exciting. And I totally agree. Your style definitely has that humorous element, that quirky sense of humor, but that real dark element to it. Well,
yes,
most definitely, definitely. No,
evil laugh here.
Absolutely. I enjoy your stories immensely.
Well, thank you. I enjoy yours too. There's just so many gifted writers, and I just am in awe when I read some of the anthologies. I just sit back in awe of that. I'm so honored to be in such a talented group of writers. It's really, really upped my game. You know, it gives me something to strive for. And I just recently did my first real sci-fi story, and that was really fun. So I might try to get more into the sci-fi a little bit as well, because that you can just really open your imagination and just the sky's the limit pretty much.
Absolutely, Lisa. Absolutely. I'm excited to hear that you're sort of branching into other genres. It's going to be interesting to see if that sci-fi has that dark element to it as well, because some of the best sort of classic science fiction stories have that unknown element and that underlying terror of what is out there.
Yes, this has a very dark twist. I'm not going to tell anyone
no.
and spoil it in case I am able to get it published. and you guys can read it. But yeah, it was, I had a little dark, kind of a unique dark take on things, I think. And I think people will get a kick out of it because it also has some humor, and it also deals with cowboys. And I live in Texas, so there's a little cowboy element, and I love the dialogue, you know, I love dialogue, and especially regional dialogue. So there's a little bit of that in there. And yeah, so it was fun. It was one of my more fun projects, I think.
This doesn't have anything to do with tumbleweeds, perhaps, does it?
No. I tried my hand. No, this one doesn't. I did that little 200-word one, you know, that was on the Black Hair Press group just, what, a couple of weeks ago?
Yes.
But I tried my hand at a long one, and I got off to a decent start, and then I just kind of petered out, and I just couldn't. You know, I just kind of lost my way on it. So I kind of had thrown it by the wayside. Well, then when I saw the 200-word little challenge, I just pulled out the best parts of the beginning of what I had already started. And that was a Texas. That was taking place in a West Texas town. And, you know, I don't live in West Texas. I'm in North Texas, but you go a little bit west of me, probably about 5 hours, because Texas is big.
Yep.
And then you'll start getting to that dry, arid climate, and there are tumbleweeds.
Yeah, okay.
And then you'll see them blowing down the street. It's really funny.
So if you travel far enough, there's plenty of inspiration.
Absolutely.
So I just wanted to sort of cycle back to something that I've noticed with some of your stories, Lisa. The family element, or I've been there, I've experienced it type stories that you write.
Okay, like you mean that revolves around a family?
So I reckon you've written a story, I can't remember where I've read it, where it got published, about a family car.
Oh, yeah, that's a memoir.
Yes.
That's actually 100% true.
Oh, yes.
And it was published in World of Myth magazine, let's see, probably last year, I want to say. And it was called There's a Fungus Among Us.
Yes. No, but...
Yes.
Well done.
But yeah, that was memoirs, and some of those are the funniest stories because, I mean, we moved around a lot, and we lived in some really crummy areas, and I can make it very funny. So that was a good one. I did enjoy that one.
You've got a lot of personal experience that you can rely on for some great tales.
Oh, yes, definitely. And that's how I kind of got started, was I wrote a true story that was in a lot of my bios. You'll see that my first published story about the time I was almost abducted by Ted Bundy when we were managing a very crummy little motel off the beaten path in Florida. And so I wrote this story. That was my very first real story. And it was published in the newspaper that my daughter worked for. She was a photojournalist for a few years, and the timing couldn't have been better. It was right when the Golden State Killer in California, serial killer, was captured. So my daughter brought that story to her editor, who thought, wow, this is timely. And so she published that, and that was my first published story in an actual newspaper. And then it branched off into a monthly humorist column, and it was all memoirs, all of it. So that was real, real fun.
So, no, sorry, Lisa, say again. So you were almost kidnapped by the Ted Bundy.
By the Ted Bundy, yep, and absolutely. And absolutely, it was, you know, I was in denial about it for a while. And then, I mean, just at some point, I didn't even realize who this person was until years down the road. It was a whole series of events that kind of, I finally figured out who it was.
Yep.
And it was a miracle. It was actually a miracle that occurred that saved my life. And he was on the rampage after murdering the co-eds at Florida State University, and he was fleeing through the panhandle, which I lived in the panhandle of Florida in Pensacola. He was fleeing through there on Mobile Highway, which is where our crummy little motel was. And he stopped over, I guess, I don't know, for a night, just because it was in a place no one would find him, probably.
Yeah, I was way off the beaten track.
It was really something.
Yeah, wow. But then for that article to get published in the local paper?
Yes.
But then for that to sort of end up resulting in you doing monthly humorous columns based on real life stories. I mean,
yes, because that story was funny. I made that story humorous because that's what I do. And then, you know, there was an element of terror at one point. But my daughter took another story. I believe it was a Fungus Among Us, actually, the one that you guys, that World of Myth published to her. And she said she set it on the editor's desk and went in her office. And she said, I could hear her laughing through the wall. And she said that was a pretty good sign when she read it. She could hear her laughing.
Oh, definitely.
So then that was when she offered me to do a monthly column that was a humorous column. So that was that's where I got a lot of initial experience. I would do about 300 to 500 words. And, you know, that was really a great experience for 2 years until COVID.
Yeah. Yeah. And then
things changed.
COVID ruined everything, didn't it?
It did. Well, one good thing, the only good thing that happened is I am now able to work remotely from home instead of commuting, and I do enjoy that aspect. But yeah, it did. It put a lot of, you know, shopping malls and restaurants, I mean, so many places out of business.
Yes, it did. It's done that sort of thing here too. It's, I think all over the world, You see a lot of small businesses, especially, sort of either struggling or stepping away. Unfortunately,
yes, it is something else. A lot of them are trying to, you know, they're coming back slowly. They're starting to make a comeback, but it's probably really devastating for the small family-owned business. But yeah, the editor got laid off because, you know, newspapers, hard copy newspapers are falling by the wayside now. And my daughter had to find another job. Yeah, that one was just going away. And that's the way of the world now. We all look at it online and, you know, the e-magazines and e-newspapers. And
yes.
They don't aren't even able to sell ads and things anymore. So things are changing.
Absolutely. And not always for the better, unfortunately.
Right.
So is your daughter still working in journalism then?
No, now she's branched into marketing. She works for a translation company that does documents for our hospitals and schools and things like that. And she does marketing, but recently they were short a project manager, so she assisted someone on project management, and so she's kind of branching into that too. And she's real organized, and I think she'd be a great project manager as well. But she really likes it, and she works from home 4 days a week and drives about an hour 1 day a week to go into the office.
That's not bad. That, I guess, that you could say would be a silver lining from the terribleness that that COVID has struck the world over. Some of us have ended up with a better deal, but
yes. How did the library fare with that? What, you know, I didn't even think about that element. How did your little Murray Bridge library make out during that?
We had a bit of a challenge coming back from COVID, and we're still finding that some of our members that used to access the library by coming in are now doing it online. We've got more digital services that that people are accessing, and that the use of the digital services is increasing. But we're finding that our numbers are slowly crawling back.
Good.
Yeah.
Libraries are just so important. I remember as a kid, I just loved to read, and my dad would drop me off. We lived in Graham, North Carolina, a little tiny town, and he would drop me off at the library, and go run errands, and they had like this little kids area, and I would curl up on the rug with a book, and it was sort of my babysitter, I think, when I was young, and that's why I just really love books and reading, and then I'm happy that it eventually turned into writing as well. But I'm so glad, because I hate for kids to miss out on that experience.
Yeah, definitely. We find that the school holiday periods are our most popular time for young families and for the primary aged children to come in.
Yes.
Otherwise, there are a lot of retirees, a lot of tourists, sort of travellers come through the Murray Bridge Library as well. We're sort of like a leap pad point from the capital city, Adelaide, to the rest of South Australia.
Oh, so you're like a stopping off point.
Yeah, quite often. Nice. People will spend a bit of time in Murray Bridge, maybe 6 months looking for a job like down at the mushroom farm or somewhere else where they can just make a bit of quick money to continue their travels.
Oh, that's great.
Yeah.
I like that idea. Just kind of working your way around the world.
So I have to say, Lisa, we're all very grateful to the Grand Carolina Library for inspiring such a wonderful, wonderful author. I'm wondering, back then, what sort of books were you reading and what sort of books are you reading now?
Well, back then, I was reading some of the classics. You know, I can't really remember exactly, but a lot of the classics in elementary school, like I do remember reading Don Quixote and Moby Dick. My dad would help me pick those books out, and I would take as many as I was allowed to check out per week. And the very first book I fell in love with was a Richard Scarry book. It was called like The Great Big Book. It was sort of these little cartoon. I don't know if you're familiar with the little cartoon characters.
I had a copy of that. My mum and dad, I reckon it was for my younger brother. And it had all the the story about all the people around the town. No, I think ours was about the world. So it was all the pig who was the Hungarian sausage maker, or the American police officer dog, or that sort of thing. Yeah, no, I know those types of stories quite well.
Yes, they were so good. My aunt and uncle gave me one for that book for Christmas, and I never had really at that point had a book. I think I was probably around 6 maybe at that point, and I fell in love with that. I didn't look at any of my other Christmas gifts.
Oh, wow.
And I just sat and read that book, and then that just inspired me to really love reading. And now, you know, I was just going to let you know how much I love writing dialogue. That's one of the things that I really love about writing. And one of my authors that I've read a lot, I haven't read anything by him lately because I think I've read everything or listened to it on him, on his narrator, Will Patton, an American actor, narrates his stories on Audible and different things. But it's James Lee Burke.
Oh, yes.
He's an American author. I love him, and I just love the dialogue and the kind of grittiness that, and also the purple prose when he's describing, you know, what you're seeing in Biotech and in Louisiana. And it's just such a neat, I just would sit back and think about what he said. I mean, he just writes in such a way that I really, really love it. And then, of course, I love horror. And I recently read, I love gothic horror, Charlotte Rydell's collection called The Open Book. I recently got that on my Kindle and read all of those stories, and they were just really, really good gothic horror written in, I believe, the late 1800s, early 1900s, maybe.
All right. Like a a great period for those sort of dark stories. The population, yes, of the day. It was either delightful romance, or it was those dark, dark tales, wasn't it?
Yes, and it's always about a house that's haunted, and, you know, it's a manor house that has gotten run down, and there's a ghost. I mean, and you would think that it would get dull after a while, because they do have similar themes, but not at all. I mean, there's so many ways that they can go with that. So that's another thing that I really kind of enjoy. Just when I don't want to concentrate too hard on a storyline, you know, complicated storyline, it's fun to sit back and just read a few of those kind of short stories. And, you know, that's maybe get a few ideas, you know, ideas to modernize somewhat.
With that dark undertone, but also possibly throwing in a humorous element where there wasn't one before.
Yes, that's a great point. Because, you know, I don't think they have. I'm trying to think if there was a humorous element, and, you know, I don't think there was. So that would be a good way to kind of a new form of gothic horror. That would be kind of interesting, I think.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely, Lisa. That could be the unique sell point of that particular story written in your style, I guess.
Yes, that would be good.
So what are you working on at the moment?
At the moment, I'm working on putting together, and I've been doing this off and on for a while, but I'm getting more motivated thinking about one of the contests that I'm in, where you could also win a publishing deal. And I thought, well, I don't have a book, so I've never, ever entered one of these challenges before, because I don't have a novel, don't have a book. But I thought, well, why can't I just put together a compilation of stories? So that's kind of where I'm at right now. I'm trying to figure out, just kind of put something together and see if I have the opportunity to have it published, or to self-publish, you know, down the road a bit.
Yeah, all right. That's sounding very, very exciting. I'm just thinking of a few different companies that I'm aware of that do publish anthologies. That's something that that I'd certainly be keen to do as well. Looking back at some of my published stories that are published online, but they're not in books.
Yes, that's a great idea. And you have some wonderful stories. It's kind of a fine art to try to figure out what you want to include and how you want to put it together. Like, I was thinking of including some drabbles in there and maybe breaking up the longer stories. But, you know, I don't really know. That's something that it'd be good to find someone to give me advice on, those type of details, because I've never done this before.
It's funny to think we're all I don't know. I cast my mind back to the 1980s, 1990s, the heyday of fantasy fiction and science fiction, where you sort of think of some of those big names, big name authors that were publishing at the time, and you think they had it all. They knew exactly what they were doing. Meanwhile, we're like the names of different authors that sort of spring to mind now. Not all of us, like very rare do any of us sort of have any idea. We're just sort of turning hobbies into something more.
Yes. And we know we are making a name for ourselves too, because we're getting our work out there in these anthologies and things. And I think that is really a great way to kind of emerge. I remember the first book, and you were in this book as well, that Stephen Lester Carr, that I was in his anthology, the Limp Noodle Sauce.
Oh, yes. That was hilarious.
And you were in that as well. And that was my very first anthology publication. And he was really kind of my mentor because he had these different themes that were really cool themes. And he put out these anthologies every so often. And I would always submit. And that was a great way to get started because I really didn't know that about that, that you could submit short stories to these publications.
Yeah.
I thought you had to write a book. You have to write a book or nothing. That's what I guess people think. They don't think about, oh, you can start, you know, small and don't overwhelm yourself. If I don't ever write a book, I'm okay with that. You know, I'm okay with that.
You can create a book, the big picture, I guess, from lots and lots of little pictures sort of put together, and they may not necessarily relate to each other. It may just be the fact that it's you that's the glue that sort of brings it all together. Or it may be that it's an anthology of multiple authors from all around the world, similar to what Stephen managed to do on many, many occasions through Sweetie Cat Press. And so many other companies as well, like ZombieWorks, Dark Myth, Black Hair Press, House of Loki. There's just so many of them out there. It really is the heyday for author. What I struggle to do is keep up with the opportunities. There are that many that you sort of know, I want to submit something to that, and then you miss the deadline. It's like,
I know.
Where did the time go?
It's like to be a lot of pressure too, and if you kind of overwhelm yourself, I have my Excel spreadsheet that's very organized, and I have my remember to submit tab, so I'll line those up with the details and the deadline. And then a lot of them are just a red highlight that said missed it. Missed it going all the way down. But because there are so many opportunities, and you just have to look online. There's one, Erica Virilia, I think is her name, that she has a Facebook page that she every single month puts out a big list on her blog, and you can reach it from her Facebook page, that has tons of paying submissions or publishers that you can submit to, a bunch of calls for submissions for short stories and poems. And I look on that every month and see if anything kind of looks good.
Yeah.
And there's then online you can find them too on Facebook. They have a couple of anthology accepting submission groups, but some of those turn out to be kind of spam and people trying to sell their marketing, you know, things like that.
Yeah, you got to watch out for that, don't you?
Yes, you do.
That's
they're everywhere.
Happening quite a lot, actually. Yes. So probably another question that I've got for you, Lisa. We've covered off when you started writing, what you enjoy writing. Sort of looked as well at your near future aspirations, creating an anthology of your own. So any of the publishers that are out there listening, my incredibly talented friend is looking for a way to share more of her stories. Dave, if you're listening, Steph,
thank you.
a wonderful, wonderful opportunity. Maybe something that you can sort of keep as a ace up your sleeve, Lisa, for the open contract challenge for next year.
Yes, yes. And, you know, that was kind of what I had in mind as well, but I got too busy to create a story and I felt really bad. I just noticed, I think today I may have noticed that the deadline had passed, and I was really bummed that happened. But that does happen sometimes, and we can't beat ourselves up. And so maybe next year, I'm going to plan ahead this year. And
as I say, Lisa, whenever a door closes, you just find a window to open.
Absolutely, you do.
There's plenty of doors and plenty of windows. That's what I love about writing now. So I sort of started writing and publishing online about 2018. So I've been very slow to get into the game. I've been trying to play catch up.
Well, that's about when I started. I started my first publication with the paper was 2018.
Yes.
So we started right about the same time, actually.
Yeah.
And so we're kind of on the same, it seems like we're kind of on the similar path because we both share a lot of the same anthologies. And so we're kind of taking a little bit of a similar path, it feels like.
Yeah, it's the same trajectory, indeed.
Yeah.
Well, it's quite a ride, Lisa, and I'm glad that that I'm able to join you on it.
I am too. It's nice to have friends along the way.
Definitely, definitely. And I find that's something else that I'm very interested in discovering. The genuine friendship that you have with like-minded people throughout your writing journey. I don't know if you've noticed that as well. It's very, very rare to find somebody that's in competition. It's more that we're trying to support each other to get more writing out there.
Yes, I have a couple of people that are in one of my groups that I do feedback exchanges. We'll do, if we have a competition, no matter if it's a paying win or, you know, just a placement without money, we will support each other before the deadline and give each other feedback, which I think is brilliant because I think that you want to challenge yourself against the very best and to find people that are willing to do feedback exchanges before the deadline of a contest is amazing.
Yeah,
it's
absolutely.
It's an unselfish group of people that are just like-minded that want to put their best work out there.
I found it like from the get-go with Stephen Lester Carr. The fact that he embraced me as a published author, and then when I admitted that it was self-publishing, and that it was like I wasn't the most confident writer. And he helped me to actually realize that I do have, like, the ability to tell a good story. That
yes, you're talented. He was good about pointing that out in people.
Yes, but also pushing you to produce the best story that you could.
Yes, challenging us.
And it's how we grow as writers and how we develop the craft and how it opens up newer opportunities.
It does, and you kind of have to, in a way, develop a thick skin because these are your babies that you're putting out there for someone to critique or, suggest changes. And at first, I would just get sad because I thought, oh no, this story's bad. But then I thought, no, this is the process. This is how we get better. We take it with a grain of salt. We either agree with it or we don't. You don't get upset and move on. Make the changes you think work and don't make the ones you don't think work and move on. And that's how we grow, I think.
And then there's always other opportunities, other places where you can send those stories. And you do eventually find a home for them. And the joy that you feel, the excitement that you feel when you do finally get a yes.
Yes, it's a really happy moment.
Absolutely. I love the fact that a no from one company doesn't mean a no from every company.
Exactly.
It's I might need to start a spreadsheet though, because the number of times that I've sent stories to multiple companies accidentally and they've gone, oh, it's just been accepted by this one. It can't really be accepted by anyone else.
Oh yeah, you definitely should do that. That's whoops, my dog. That's the thing that has saved me. My memory gets so bad because you're right, putting out so many stories, and it gets kind of convoluted. And I'll do one for each calendar year, one that's my submissions for publication, and one that's my contest, and then my remember to submit for each calendar year. And it really and then I'll highlight it in green if it's accepted, the row in green, and the in red if it's rejected. And it has kept my sanity, really, because I can look back and see, oh wait, well, this one's still pending, I can't send this one out, or this one was rejected, so let's try again.
Yeah. No, that sounds like something that I definitely have to do. But I mean, if you talk to my family and you talk to my work colleagues, I am probably one of the most disorganized people. So.
Well, I would be happy to send you a kind of a copy, like email you a copy of kind of how I've put mine together for you to kind of look at and see if it's something that might help you out.
That would be amazing, Lisa. That would be wonderful. Thank you.
Yeah,
thank you so
that.
Much. It's once again, writers helping writers. It is a beautiful thing.
It is.
So thank you so much for spending some time with me, Lisa, for talking writing and sort of giving us a bit of a glimpse into where your inspiration for stories comes from and what you've got hopefully coming up in the future.
Well, thank you for inviting me to be a guest. I was really a little bit nervous because I think, well, I hope I can say something that's interesting or pertinent. And you know how you kind of worry. But then you and I decided we were going to call it talking about writing and whatnot.
Absolutely. And I think
we just made it a conversation. And then it was fun. You know, it was so nice to talk to you for the first time, you know, when not just in Messenger and, you know, things like that. So I really enjoyed it and I appreciate it.
Yeah, most definitely. No, I appreciate you making the time as well. And it's been great to finally hear your voice, have a bit of a chat. And I think we've totally nailed the brief of talking about writing and whatnot. I think we've covered it all.
I think we did too. We did a good job.
So well done. And thank you also to the listeners for tuning in. I hope you've enjoyed. I guess it's ciao for now. Until next week, next episode, hopefully I will have the time to look through this incredible magazine, issue 125. Are you in there, Lisa?
No, I'm not in this one.
You'll have to make sure that you get into the May issue. From our chief editor, Steph, aka Looper, there is a call in the current April issue for sending everything that you possibly can for September. September is going to be the 130th issue of the magazine, but it's also going to be the 20-year anniversary. So the original World of Myth magazine came out in September of 2004. So this year, September, we are celebrating 20 years, and we want
a massive
send it all. If you've got poetry, stories, send everything you've got. Steph's looking to create a big, beautiful bumper edition of this incredible magazine. So call to arms. You've been warned.
Oh, well, let me ask you something. This is where I always get just slightly confused. So in order to be published in the September magazine, the deadline for that is September 15th?
That is correct.
Is that for the September? Okay, because yes. I'm never sure if it's the previous month they're taking those submissions. Like, for instance, it would be August submission for the September episode.
No, definitely.
But it'll be September
15th
is
the cutoff. For sure.
Okay. It's going on my remember to submit
Yep. Add that to the spreadsheet, Lisa. Add it to the spreadsheet.
Okay, I'll send it to you.
Most definitely. All right. So I can guarantee, Steph, there'll definitely be plenty from Tim, plenty from Lisa, and hopefully many, many others submitting as well for the big, big, beautiful bumper edition of the World of Myth magazine. Ciao for now to everyone. And again, thank you, Lisa.
Oh, thank you. Bye, everyone.